views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Welcome to Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasek. Marge was searching for the purpose of her life and the truth that would tie everything together to make sense of what was taught and what was happening on our planet, the fire that was creating all the smoke. Through many experiences, she was finally led to the Knowledge Book that provided all the answers. Marge is now talking about this gift to humanity on Knowledge Book Radio, so all can be united in peace, love, and harmony. This live call-in show at 1-800-930-2819 is amazing. So get ready to hear about the Knowledge Book. Here's your host, Marge Potasek.
Hello, everyone. I'm Marge Potasek, and you're listening to the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasek on Transformation Talk Radio. For the next hour, as we've been doing for a while, we will continue to cover some topics from the Knowledge Book. And this week, we are going to talk about comets with the question of omens of death or birth. So are comets actually the omens of death or of birth? This is the question that was posed. And since the Knowledge Book mentions comets in the text, I thought that we would cover what comets are, where they come from, what their structure is, what the history is recording their coming to this planet, and the sightings that were done over time, and what the Knowledge Book says about comets, and possibly something new that people have not known before. Okay, but before we go on, like to basically remind you that our website is www.usa.theknowledgebook.net. The Turkish website for the World Brotherhood Union is www.dkbdavidkiteboy-mevlana.org.tr. My contact information for text messages or telephone calls is 973-787-7035. And of course, my email address is mmjp99@gmail.com. We would appreciate receive any kind of questions you may have about any of the topics that we're covering this time, or we covered last time, or throughout the program broadcasts. And also, if you have any topics that you would like to have discussed from the Knowledge Book or something tangential to the Knowledge Book, please forward them to either the text or the email. We'll be more than happy to take that into consideration and cover it at some future shows. Okay, so let's dive into the topic of comets, whether they are actually omens of death or birth. Now, comets have inspired both awe and alarm since antiquity, because they seem like hairy stars that sometimes resembled swords, fiery swords. And to many people on the planet at that time who were looking at these comets, they seem like omens of doom, something that is as portent, a sign of something bad going to happen. And now scientists have found evidence that comets not only may have taken life away through cataclysmic impacts over time, they also may have helped to provide life by supplying the Earth with vital molecules such as water. And in fact, comets may be the source of some of the amino acids that form the structure of life on this planet. Now, the sight of a bright comet has fascinated humankind through the ages. But what's behind such celestial spectacles? It's only in modern times that researchers have gotten wise to the phenomenon. And by then, comets had already had a long career as harbingers of bad tidings, or sometimes seen as heavenly messengers. Now, we think currently that comets formed about the same time as the giant planets of our solar system. And these giant planets are, of course, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. And that was about 4.6 billion, that's with a B, billion years ago. Now, some scientists don't agree with that, and they think that comets are made from the same clumps of dust and ice that erupted from our sun's birth, meaning the sun came in, was started to be born, and these comets were basically exploded out of the sun, and that's where they come from, which means they would be at the same age as the solar system. And this would be the same time that the planets were also formed. So the planets, the comets, and the sun would be forming basically at about the same time, as opposed to being at the same time as Jupiter, Saturn, and Uranus, and Neptune. Okay. However, everyone mostly agrees that comets are roving time capsules, and they carry very primitive debris from a very, very long time ago with the inception of our solar system. Now, if you look at the solar system diagram, you will see, and you could picture the sun being at the center, then, of course, being there comes Mercury, then comes Venus, then Earth, then, of course, planet Earth, planets, moon. And then you've got the large planets. And in between, there is a asteroid belt. And outside of that, there's something called the Oort cloud. And this Oort cloud is the one that basically is the originator or from where the comets come. Okay. So let's look and talk about and review some of the information about comets, what they look like, what their anatomy is. Then we'll go into maybe the history of comets and what effect they had had on humanity and how they affect our consciousness. And this is where the knowledge book would be coming in. Okay, so what does a comet look like? What is the anatomy of a comet? First of all, the total environment of a comet, this total structure includes the interior of the nucleus, the surface of the nucleus, which morphs as the comet approaches the sun, and then the coma that emerges from and surrounds the nucleus, and the tails that eventually trail behind the comet as it approaches the sun. So we also have, the comet that has the nucleus, has the coma, has a dust trail, has an ion trail, and these can be really, really, really huge. I was actually surprised as to how big the comets are and how far the tails extend. So the tails themselves could be 33 million kilometers. That's 20.5 million kilometers long. That's how long the tails can be. In terms of the coma itself could extend 80,000 kilometers, which is 50,000 miles. And of course, the nucleus of the comet can range anywhere from 1 to 10 kilometers, which is from 1 to 6 miles across. So these are actually very huge. And when I heard the comets described as dirty snowballs, I kind of thought of a picture of a snowball maybe being the size of a basketball or maybe the size of a football or a balloon or one of these exercise balls, but I never thought that it would be 6 miles across. And then, of course, outside of that, there is another structure of the coma, the dust, and the ion trail that basically trail behind it. So again, if we look at the nucleus itself, then we can see that when that nucleus is very far from the sun, then the comets are very big asymmetrical chunks of ice, and that is those chunks of ice are mixed with dust or rock, and they're basically less than 10 miles across. And this is what comprises the comet's nucleus. Now, scientists used to think that it was solid, that this nucleus was solid and firm, but there was a mission that was sent to a comet, and this was NASA's Deep Impact mission from 2005, and what they found surprised them. Basically, they found that the nucleus of a comet that they visited, which is Tempel 1, had more silicon or dust than they expected. And it was also harder than they had expected the comet to be. It was more compact. Now, when the comet is in deep space, and where, of course, it's very, very, very cold, and it's very far from the sun, it is completely frozen. But when it approaches to about 140 to 280 million miles, which turns out to be 225 million to 450 million kilometers, when it becomes that close to the sun, which of course seems very, very far, but it looks like the sun's influence and solar wind extends that far out. So when it is about 140 to 100 million miles away from the sun, then the ice begins to sublime. Now, sublimation is basically a process whereby a material, an element, changes from its solid form to its gaseous form without going through the liquid phase. So again, sublimation is something like water going directly from wet water, or actually that's not solid, that's liquid, going from ice to water vapor. So in this case, it's the particles that are inside the comet that basically turn from its solid form into its gas form. And this gas boils off the surface of the comet, or they burst out of the interior as jets of gas. And this gas carries dust with them. And this spewing gas and dust create a huge coma, meaning it's kind of like a basketball then having a huge area around it that's filled with little bits of that basketball in gaseous form. And that coma basically grows large, and it could be 60,000 miles across or 100,000 kilometers. So this coma that builds around the nucleus of the comet then becomes part of what we see as the head of the comet, the thing that is the leading edge of the comet when we see it in the sky. Now, as the coma grows larger, it becomes an obstacle to the streaming solar wind. So you've got to remember that the sun itself is always projecting particles of itself into the surrounding space, and that is what is called the solar wind. So when this coma meets the solar wind, it creates a bow shock in front of the coma. And this is, you can liken this to, let's say, a boat going on the sea. And this is that wave that forms at the head of the boat, which is the interaction of the boat going through the sea and the force of the boat impacting the sea and the sea pushing back. And if you remember, sometimes you will see that the boats are being surrounded by fish and especially by dolphins that actually use this shock bow, this bow wave, to basically get a free ride from the boat. Now, when the pressure of the coma of these gases around the nucleus get to be equal to the pressure of the solar wind, then the solar wind and its associated magnetic field slow down, and that compresses against the coma. And then, because of this, there's a stream that is formed around the comet and behind the comet, and it actually carries that bits of dust and ions that were in the coma behind them, and that's how the comet tail actually forms. And as the coma grows, different regions, similar to those found on Earth's own upper atmosphere and magnetosphere, also form inside it. So this is the inner shock, the ionosphere, the ionosphere, and the cometosphere and cometopause. So this is something like we'll have the same kind of a structure as far as the atmosphere around the Earth. The structure is similar to that of the comet itself. Now, when the particle leaves the surface of the comet and flies out, it accelerates through that inner shock wave, and they also may interact with the light from the sun. And they also may interact with other molecules or possibly photoelectrons and may continue accelerating even beyond the bow shock. So the tail is humongous and it's long. Now, when the solar wind and magnetic field lines wrap around the coma, they push ionized gaze and dust and gas around dust away from and around the head of the comet, and they form tails that always stream directly away from the sun. So interestingly enough, the tail will switch position as it goes around the sun, and it will always be pushed by the solar wind away from the sun. So when it is approaching, it'll be in a different angle to itself than as it comes closer and then further away from the sun. Now, the first kind of tail that is formed from that dust erupting from the nucleus is the dust tail. And this contains microscopic dust particles, which usually form a broad and gently curved tail that actually stretches up to 60 million miles. That could be 100 million kilometers. However, there is also a second kind of tail that is formed, and this is the ion tail. And this tail is actually straighter and thinner, and this is composed of ionized gas. And these ion tails can become quite long. Now, when Comet Hyakutake's ion tail stretched an amazing 360 million miles, that's a humongous length, and that's about times the distance between the Earth and the Sun, and this is the longest tail that's ever been observed by humans, and it's an amazing long tail to wag in space. But anyway, scientists studying the comet Hale-Bopp also noted a faint sodium tail, something not seen frequently on visible comets. There is no doubt about it, comets put on some of the most amazing shows you'll ever see. Now, if you notice in some of the pictures that we have pictures that we have taken of comets, you will have tails that are different. One will be a different color than the other. Some of them could be greenish, some of them could be bluish, some of them could be yellowish. These are the colorful ones are the ion tails, and the others are the dust tails. Okay. Now let's go a little bit into the history of comets. So as we were saying before, about 4.5 billion, that's with a B, years ago, a solar nebula condensed to form the planets, the moon, the asteroids, and comets of our solar system. Now, the planet's gravity propels comets outwards to form the distant Oort cloud and funnels most asteroids into a belt between Mars and Jupiter. Now, 33.8 billion years ago, this is what is called as a late heavy bombardment, and many massive impacts from debris left over after planet building batter the Earth and the Moon and the inner planets, Mercury, Venus, and Mars, and these impacts are large enough to keep much of their surfaces molten. So originally, the surface of all these planets, the rocks, rocky planets, were melted. 65 million years ago, and this is when an object, probably an asteroid about 10 kilometers across, crashed into what is known now as Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula, and it formed a 300-kilometer-wide crater called Chicxulub. And the resulting global tail of red-hot impact debris set fires everywhere. Now, this is what formed the impact winter. This is what killed off all the dinosaurs and most of the life on our planet at that time. So this was an asteroid that hit our planet, 10-kilometer asteroid that hit our planet, and it formed a 300-kilometer-wide, which is 186-mile crater. Then 50,000 years ago, a 50-meter-wide, meaning a third of a mile wide, nickel-iron meteorite slammed into what is now Arizona, and this is what formed the meteor crater. And this is the crater that is the best-preserved large impact crater on our planet, and it is 4 kilometers across. Now we'll go on a little bit more into the history of the comets coming into contact with Earth. Now, about 28 million years ago, a comet exploded over Egypt, and this created a temperature of 3,600 3,600 degrees Fahrenheit or 2,000 degrees Celsius. This was a blast wave that spread out over the entire desert. And this shock wave melted the sand, and it formed a lot of yellow silica glass that was scattered over 2,300 square miles. And this is found in the Sahara. Now, although Tutankhamun is the most famous Egyptian pharaoh in history, he has another feather to add to his cap. And this is that they have found, and they made research, that there is a piece of jewelry that Tutankhamun has or had, and it contains gemstones that was created during a comet impact roughly 28 million years ago. And it's a scarab pendant of a scarab beetle. Okay. Now, we can go through all kinds of history of comets as to when they hit, when it was discovered. So the earliest notation, the earliest history kept of a comet being in contact with the Earth was in 6613 BC. This is before the Common Era. And this was believed to be the first sighting of Halley's Comet and the earliest record of any history being kept about comets. Then another that was kept was in 350 BC. There was another comet noticed by Aristotle, and he thought that comets exist in the upper atmospheres, in other words, much closer than they actually are. And this is what we believed for maybe 2,000 years. Now, Emperor Constantine in Rome, he thought he saw a cross in the sky being formed by a comet, and this caused his conversion to Christianity. And some think that this was actually a comet, or some think that this may have been the flash of a meteor impact. This was 312 AD. Then there is a tapestry, the Bayeux tapestry, where the comet is seen coming in. This is 1066. This is already AD. And again, this is the appearance of Halley's Comet that's documented in the tapestry. And actually, the tapestry basically depicts the Norman conquest of England. Then there are all kinds of histories in 1577. Tycho Brahe measures positions of the Great Comet and compares it to other places where they have seen the same comet, and he then ascertained that the comets are much further away from us than was believed by Aristotle and everyone up until that point of 1577. Now, Edmund Halley in 1705 makes the first prediction of when the comet will appear. So he's the first one that said this is the same comet returning over and over again, and he predicted when the next comet will be coming. I think many people have also heard about this Tunguska, Siberia event, where there was a huge boom heard thousands of miles away from where it actually happened, and they thought that this was actually a comet that exploded in the atmosphere, and this blast actually released 500 kilotons of energy, which is equivalent to a hydrogen bomb explosion. So these comets can actually cause humongous damage when it impacts. Then there was a geologist in 1960, Eugene Shoemaker. He proved that Meteor Crater in Arizona was really produced by an impact. People didn't know what it was before, but he actually proved this. And this was the first impact crater that was seen and identified on the Earth. Now, in 1979, we're coming very close to the current time, Luis Alvarez and colleagues published a paper that linked the final dinosaur extinction to a major, massive or asteroid impact or comet impact. And then, since people at that time in 1979 said, oh, wait a minute, if we're finding craters on this planet, if we're finding impact craters both in Arizona and then in Mexico, and they cause the extinction of the comets or extinction of the dinosaurs and life on the planet that was known at the time, hey, maybe we need to look and see what's going on out there. Where are these meteors? Where are these comets coming from? What are the their tracks? What are their trajectories? We've got to know what's going on out there so we can protect ourselves here from some kind of an impact. So in 1992, the U.S. Congress appointed a panel, and that proposed a Space Guard program to search for all the near-Earth asteroids that are longer than 1 kilometer across, and they wanted to plot all this within 10 years. Now, in 1993, Comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 was discovered. And if we remember, or some of us may remember, that in 1993, this comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 broke apart by going, you know, by the sun, and its gravitational encounter with Jupiter, and then dozens of pieces of this comet crashed into Jupiter in 1994. Now, there was another program called NEAT, which is Near Earth Asteroid Tracking Project. And this was done at an Air Force tracking telescope in Hawaii. And they are discovering near Earth asteroids, and lots of them were discovered. Okay. There was one in 1996 that was discovered, an asteroid with an orbit that could possibly hit the Earth. And then there was something called the Torino Scale, produced by and published by Rick Benzel. And this is a way to categorize these near-Earth objects that are basically coming towards Earth as asteroids or comets. And they have a rating scale from 0 being no risk and 10 being virtually certain to cause global devastation. So they assign a code number, a scale, to asteroids circling in the skies and basically let us know what chance we have of being hit by an asteroid. Now, there is one that's predicted to possibly being able to be close enough to the Earth in 2880. So in 2880, 800 years from now, or 850 years from now, and it has a 1 in 600 chance of striking the Earth, okay? However, you know, they had theorized, what if we send an atom bomb out there and break up the comet? And then, of course, that causes the problem. Well, if we break up a comet into smaller pieces, we have no control over the smaller pieces as to where they're going to be falling. And maybe they'll come under the gravitational pull of the Earth, and those smaller pieces will impact us. And instead of helping to save ourselves, we are actually dooming ourselves to greater risk of being bombarded by pieces of the asteroid coming to the planet. But what they found, and this is called the Yarkovsky effect, that if they send a mission to the asteroid and paint it, spray paint it white, then the comet itself or the asteroid itself will not be able to absorb the solar energy reaching it. It's like the same thing that's on the planet. If we are at the towards the poles, we have a lot more snow, which means that snow reflects the sun's energy away, which means that the region becomes cold, and any place that is not white, like all the other regions of the planet, they absorb the light and they warm up. So this would be the same thing. They would not allow these comets to basically warm up enough to form comets and disintegrate and become smaller, and then will not be able to then hit the planet, okay? We actually had a mission that actually went out that actually collected whatever comet dust was in the tail of a comet. And there is a comet, or there is an asteroid that is now called Apophis. And apparently it had a threat level of 4, which is, a you know, on the lower scale of being possible of hitting the planet. But now they basically improved the calculations of how this asteroid is coming in and going around the sun. So they lowered that threat level to something lower than a 4. Now, there is a deep impact spacecraft became or becomes the first object deliberately sent into collision with a comet. This comet is called Tempel 1, and this was done on July 4th in 2004, and they're proposing to actually move this asteroid from a collision course without touching it, and they're going to do this by using gravity. And again, there is more and more studies that are being done to know which asteroids are where, what impact possibility there is with the planet. And you may see on the internet, you know, oh, a comet or an asteroid just passed that by the planet, maybe, you know, 20 million miles away, this and that and the other. However, they're predicting in 2880, there is an asteroid called 1950 DA. This has the greatest known probability of a major impact on the 16th of March in 2880. And these odds currently given is 1 in 600. So it's still not, you know, a major cause for alarm. Now, we have rarely, if ever, at this point, been able to observe implosions of comets in the planetary atmospheres. And these are very, very, very rare events. However, from July 16th through July 22nd in 1994, the pieces of the comet called Comet P. Shoemaker-Levy 9 collided with Jupiter. And at that point, Comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 was composed of 21 separate discernible fragments, and these diameters were estimated to be about 2 kilometers. So this was the first collision of two solar system bodies that were ever observed. And the effects of this collision on Jupiter's atmosphere have been very spectacular and beyond, you know, scientists' expectations. So when Galileo, which is a spacecraft, arrived at Jupiter, they imaged ripples in Jupiter's main ring in 1996 and 2000. And the entire ring tilted in 1994 by about 1.24 miles or 2 kilometers following the impact. And in 2011, almost 20 years after the impact, the Pluto-bound New Horizons spacecraft still was detecting disturbances in the ring, according to a paper that was published in the journal Science. And now, of course, there are many scientists engaged in finding cosmic objects that could possibly potentially hit the Earth. Now, one of the famous of all comets is, and Bell's known comets, is Halley's Comet, which is a periodic comet, and it visits the inner solar system every 75 to 76 years. And this was first recorded in 240 BC, and it came here recently as well. This, of course, was the first comet to have its orbit calculated. This was done by Sir Edmund Halley, who predicted that the return of the great comet in 1759. And Mark Twain was born in 1835 during the passage of Halley's Comet. Now, there was a fleet of international space probes that visited the comet in 1986. And the next time it'll come to Earth is in 2061, which is not that too far away. So this is Halley's Comet. Now, of course, the Knowledge Book mentions the Kohoutek Comet. And, you know, comets can be fickle. We can predict whatever we want to predict. However, they often defy the predictions and fail to perform. So they thought that Kohoutek Comet was going to be this wonderful, spectacular comet. However, it didn't pan out the way the scientists thought that it was going to be pan out, and this was discovered in 1973. Now, the astronomers projected it would become the comet of the century, and the media picked up this kind of acclaim and blew it out of proportion. And what happened is Kohoutek partially disintegrated and failed to live up to its expectations. Didn't have a humongous tail, didn't have the image that everyone was hoping for or was imagining. However, there was another comet that came in about 2 years later, Comet C-1975 V1 West, which was very spectacular, but of course the media at that point ignored it. Now, the Sun itself is the author of the system, according to modern astronomy, and the king and the ruler of this system based on tradition. Excuse me. Now, it is when the comet hits the perihelion, meaning the point where it is the closest to the sun, that it has the greatest influence, that the comet has the greatest influence on the surrounding area and on the sun, and therefore can give a message. Now, the message itself is not delivered until the comet makes its closest approach to the sun, where the message is actually assimilated into the system. Now, this message that is given by the comet alters trade and political arrangements and forms alliances into new patterns. It creates new connections. Now, this best recent example of this is Comet Kohoutek. When Comet Kohoutek came, it coincided with the formation of the oil cartel and many related crises. And as would be expected from a major influence, December 1973, Kohoutek also had an impact on large corporations, especially the auto industry and international trade. Now, Kohoutek itself was a visitor from the Oort cloud, and although it was not spectacular to view, it was visible and has a very long period of effect. The greatest effect is during the 8th, when it is the closest to the sun, but 1/8 of a very long orbital period is still a very, very long time. Now, this is where the news comes in. An unusual comet skimmed past the sun on February 18th to the 21st in 2015, and this image was captured by the European Space Agency, or ESA, and NASA's Solar and Heliospheric Observatory, or SOHO. Now, this comet was interesting to the scientists and for everyone for two reasons. First of all, it's what is called a non-group comet, meaning it's not part of any known family of comets. Most comets seen by SOHO belong to the Crutes family, all of which broke off from a single giant comet many centuries ago. The second reason is because the vast majority of comets that come close enough to the sun and to be seen by SOHO do not survive the trip. Known as sun grazers, these comets usually evaporate in the intense sunlight. However, this comet made it to within 2.2 million miles of the sun's surface, but survived the trip intact. Now, since launching in 1995, SOHO has become the number one comet finder of all time. This was comet discovery number 2,875. But what usually SOHO sees are the 9-group comets like this only a few times a year. So whenever a comet comes in or a comet is predicted to come in, it usually creates fear and uncertainty. And humans around the world have peered at comets like Hale-Bopp with fear, awe, curiosity, superstition, and suspicion. Throughout recorded history, people have looked at the heavens and celestial phenomena such as comets, meteor showers, the northern lights, novas, and even eclipses, and this have provoked visceral responses ranging from reverence to hysteria. Comets in particular have held an extended and generally terrifying fascination for people, according to researchers at the University of Washington. So comets have a long history, usually seen as omens and bearers of bad news. However, to differ, the death of Julius Caesar was marked by a comet, and this was taken by the Romans as a sign of his divinity. And Napoleon pointed out to the appearance of comets in conjunction with his early military victories. So this was a good sign for the two of them. However, mostly the comets have generally been regarded as unwelcome visitors over the years. Now, in fact, there was a case in which a comet, or Halley's Comet, was actually excommunicated by a pope. This was done in 1456 because it was seen as the instrument of the devil. So this is a really bad sign. And this same comet, or actually the comet that came in 1835-36, which was, of course, Halley's Comet, it was blamed for the large fire in New York, a Zulu massacre of Boers in South Africa, and the Mexican slaughter of Texans at the Alamo. Comets and their effects. In 1965, when Comet Ikiaseki passed by, the United Kingdom House of Lords proposes criminalizing male homosexual acts. In May 2013, 3 girls kidnapped for 10 years were released, and in the U.S., the definition of marriage was changed to include same-sex couples. In the same year, Brazil, France, New Zealand, Britain, Luxembourg, and Uruguay legislated to allow homosexual marriage. So these are changes. These are new things that are coming into play when the comet appears. Okay, in September 1882, when the Great Comet passed by, Thomas Edison switched on his first generator in New York and radically changed everyone's lifestyle. In 1976, when Comet West passed by, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak sold their first Apple I personal computer kit. And in 1986, when Halley's Comet visited, the first computer virus appeared, and Britain and France announced the construction of the biggest undersea tunnel project at that time, and this was the birth of the Channel Tunnel. Okay, now, comets and their quantum connection. So quantum physics is basically based on probabilities, on something appearing or disappearing depending on a field of probabilities. So comets are both predictable and at the same time not predictable. So this is how the comets are connected to quantum physics. And this is something to think about as to maybe how comets can also be applied and learned from. So although they are predictable to some extent, for those comets who have a basically regular orbit, comets are both messengers and cosmic wildcards. So they are regular, or we don't know what's going to happen. So they are the ones that most strongly represent the action of chance in the cosmic scheme of things. They are in many ways the manifestation of uncertainty. There are things we cannot know with certainty until they arrive. And the comets themselves can be dead without any kind of influence at all. And they break up, or they become visible, or they are alive, meaning they are visible to us, they communicate with us, and they communicate with the sun and give us messages. Or there is always some uncertainty as to when or if they will return or if they will come again. So even though we can predict that Halley's Comet could be coming in, you know, or later this century, however, that is not certain. Okay, and this is where the uncertainty principle of quantum mechanics is actually demonstrated by comets. Now, there's something to think about. The meteor showers that we are seeing at certain times of the year in the sky, they're actually the remnants of comets that have broken up, okay? So how do we understand comets? For most of history, comets were thought to be divine omens, atmospheric anomalies, or celestial wanderers that flashed through the solar system before vanishing into interstellar space. But maybe now, before we go into the rest, it's a good time to take a short break. So I'd like to remind you that we're listening to the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik, and to remind everyone that our website is www.usa.theknowledgebook.net. The telephone numbers for questions and topics is 973-787-7035, and the email address is mmjp99@gmail.com. Again, MaryMaryJohnPeter99@gmail.com. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion of comets. Are they omens of birth or death or birth? Okay, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class Facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
Gifted intuitive healer and spiritual teacher Sarah Luce brings her unique style to the hit show Small Steps, Big Breakthrough Radio on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in each month as Sarah turns reality on end and shows us how to experience expansive results with simple yet powerful steps. Expect an enlightening bend on what you currently believe is possible. For show details and upcoming topics, visit SarahLuce.com. That's SarahLuce.com.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Do you believe you are meant to live with more joy, but you're just not sure how to get it? What does the phrase, "give me the joy," make you feel? Join me, Lynn Horde, every second and fourth Thursday, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern, on the Give Me the Joy Show, as I take you on a journey to peel back the layers so you can take back your joy. To find out more about my work as the Joy Coach, including my popular programs, Joy School and Joy at Work, visit lynnhorde.com.
Take your own journey with the angels with Claire Candy Hoff's heaven-sent guided angel meditation CD. Letting go of concerns and living in the now. This beautiful CD walks listeners through practical exercises to help free them from the burdens, worries, and concerns of daily life.
Walking a quarter of the way across the bridge, you see a bright emerald green light and sense a loving presence. This is Archangel Raphael's green healing energies, nourishing and revitalizing you. Take a moment now to bathe in this green healing light.
Giving you much more than just relaxation and stress release, this wonderfully narrated CD provides vivid visualization, soothing and inspiring music, and an angel's choir that will bring you peace, clarity, and a newfound awareness. Visit angelhealinghouse.com today.
And we're back on the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik on Transformation Talk Radio. And again, the reminder, our website is www.usa.theknowledgebook.net. Our telephone number is 973-787-7035. This is for texting or telephone calling. Any suggestions or questions? And, of course, the email address is mmjp99@gmail.com. Mary John Peter 99@gmail.com. And we will continue and wrap up our topic for today, which is comets. Are they omens of death or birth? So again, for much of history, comets were thought to be divine omens. They're atmospheric anomalies or celestial wanderers that actually flash through the solar system before vanishing again into interstellar space. Now, how else can we understand comets? The knowledge book itself explains that every dimension has its particular knowledge corresponding to its energy and power, and every entity in that dimension has a body that can exist at that dimension comfortably, having completely integrated with the energy knowledge of that dimension. Also, every dimension has its own magnetic field, and these fields, although they can reflect to each other, they cannot interfere with each other. As each field locks itself to other magnetic fields whenever it notices a different magnetic field. So the question comes up, how does an entity go from dimension to dimension? And this is where the knowledge book explains that this is where that comets play a critical role. They scoop up the energy's knowledge pores or seeds from one power field and scatter these to all the fields they pass through from their tails, depending on that comet's energy power. Now, these pores that are being sown by the comets from their tails, they actually provide the nourishment for dormant seeds of every entity that has reached a certain consciousness evolution level, and this allows that seed to germinate and to eventually to mature and bear fruit. So, as can be seen from the history of comets and their impact on the world, comets both brought death and destruction and simultaneously brought life and innovation. Whether a particle or a universe or anything in between, everything is undergoing evolution. every energy exists until it is exhausted and is then transformed into a different energy with its own particular power and influence until it is exhausted and it is then transformed into a different energy, etc., etc., etc. World history is filled with examples of leaders, political, economic, and social constructs dying when a comet passes, and leaders, political, economic, and social constructs being born when a comet passes. The comet who sowed these seeds of reform and change has then succeeded in its mission, in their missions. Now, since 1995, SOHO Observatory actually found almost 3,000 comets that came close to the sun. And this averages about 130 comets per year. Initially, as far as history recorded comets, and comets, of course, were these humongous deals that were happening at that time, we have very little comets being recorded very early in our history. However, there was an increase in the number of comets that are being recorded as we're going to the present times. To now, we're getting about 130 comets per year. Now, the Knowledge Book also states that as the human consciousness grows, as the magnetic field of the human consciousness grows, it is able to attract to itself different comets so that we will get different energy pores that get sown into this higher level consciousness, and therefore they're able to progress. So over millions of years, comets have brought us to our current status, where many are ready through their cosmic consciousness to germinate their seeds of higher consciousness that are still waiting to sprout. So the solar system actually may be hosting a visitor from the stars. A newly discovered comet is streaming away from Earth, and based on its weird orbital trajectory, astronomers think it might be the first comet ever observed that came from interstellar space. Most of the comets that are coming in from the Oort cloud or from the Kuiper belt, and this is something outside of this. This is outside of our solar system. So there is a sky surveying telescope in Hawaii that spotted the fast-moving object that is now called C217U1, and this was observed on the 18th of October in 2017 when it passed closest to the sun. And during the next week, astronomers made all kinds of observations, 34 of them to be exact, of that object, and found it had a strange trajectory that is an angle, that is at an angle to the orbits of the planets and does not circle the sun. So most comets follow ellipse-shaped orbits around the sun, swooping in from the distant Oort cloud to kiss the inner solar system before heading back out again. This one, by contrast, will never return. Its orbital path suggests it sailed in from the direction of the constellation Lyra above the relatively flat plane of the solar system, looped around the sun, and is headed back out for eternity. Now, of course, the Knowledge Book has been giving us and talking to us about energies and knowledge coming in from the unknown dimensions. So the question arises, could this comet that was discovered in 2017 in October, So today is the anniversary. Well, no, it's September, not October. It was almost the anniversary of it being discovered. So could this comet be carrying the pores of the unknown dimensions because it is coming from outside the current solar system dimensions? And like the Knowledge Book often reminds us, we need to live and to see the future unfolding. So we posed a question at the beginning of the show. And this question was, are comets omens of death or life? And I think the conclusion and answer to our question of whether comets bring death and destruction or new life and innovation is an answer all of the above. Yes, to both. They do bring in new life, new constructs, new paradigms to appear in the world dimension. And the old life, the old constructs, paradigms must disappear since they will not be able to exist in the newer and higher energy field. So we either evolve or disappear. We either jump the dimension or disappear. However, those entities, those celestial authorities who have helped and guided us up till now, who have basically backed us up and provided energies and knowledge to us for us to be able to continue to evolve, So they are still here to guide us to the new or old but new paradigm of peace and love, new life, when we work with the Knowledge Book and its studies that are perfectly designed to allow us to succeed. So again, those entities, those beings, those celestial authorities that have helped us and guided us up to now are still there to help and guide us to the old but new paradigm of peace and love, because they've talked about this all along, peace and love and harmony and acceptance and a new life when we work with the Knowledge Book and its studies that are perfectly designed to follow, to allow us to succeed. The choice, of course, is ours to make, and the consequences, of course, are ours to live it through. So again, this was Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik on Transformation Talk Radio. Please visit us on the website. And if you're in New York area, we have a focal point every Saturday at 7 p.m. We ask you to be here by 6:30, where we read one chapter of the book and explain it and have time for questions and maybe have something to eat. Okay, this has been Marge Potasik. We will speak with you again next week. So enjoy, and please remember, you are the ones who will save the world. Thank you.
You've been listening to Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik. Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity, and its time of transition to the Golden Age that provided the truth and energies and frequencies. Now, she shares information from and answers questions about the Knowledge Book with you each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information, visit Marge at usa.theknowledgebook.net.